July 11th, 2017, it's the Watt from Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Watt for Pedro show. Back in Pedro. Getting back from Memphis last night, where I did last show without Brother Matt, but I am very fortunate to have you back.
Welcome back. Welcome back.
A little later, the school.
Yeah, summer school schedule.
Ah, that's what it is. So we're not 10 in the morning. Yeah. And we should welcome our guests, but we want to thank our guests, too, for bearing with that change at the last minute. Sorry. We like it at 10 in the morning.
All the way from, the morning's
good. We're doing
good.
A big tour. Big two-y in the afternoon-y. This is One Square Mile. Introduce yourself, please. Start with Brother Earl on the port.
Earl Liberty on bass.
Noel Neville, vocals.
Rob Holtzman, drums.
John McCree on guitar.
Okay.
Welcome.
We started the show off with John Coltrane doing Nature Boy. And then One Square Mile with
Fight the good fight.
Fight the good fight. Yeah, not fight the go. Dot, dot, dot. let's start with you, Earl. Your earliest musical memory. I know there was music in your house.
Earliest musical memory is listening to my dad play. I mean, he was a musician.
I mean, we know that, but the listeners might not know.
No, but, musician from, conga player from Cuba. He made it over here back in the 40s. Made his way in. He was came over here as a dancer, actually. Was part of a dance troupe called the Cuban Diamonds.
But no playing, just dancing?
No, just dancing.
Well, did he practice dancing in the pad?
Well, he practiced dancing at the parks in Havana. You know, and Sundays was a big day for, all the people in Havana to go out and enjoy the day, So they'd go out to the parks. Where people
I was thinking, because if he was dancing at your pad, because you weren't around in the 40s yet.
No.
But then you might have been hearing that, because, that kind of dancing is very musical.
Very much.
So the feet on the deck, I'm not saying it's flamenco, but kind of...
No, it's, it's song.
My theory is dancing is actually the first drums.
Yeah, total percussion.
Yeah, with the earth.
Well, that's what, percussions, he had all kinds of things in the house that we would...
So did he practice percussion?
Oh, absolutely.
Here's a question. What made him move from dancing to the conga?
Well, he played congas the whole time, but the dancing part was what brought him over here as a group to make money out here in the U.S. So they started out in Miami, and then they went up to New York. And, he was playing congas on the side, but ended up becoming the primary thing that he did after he broke up from the group, because the guy who was kind of leading the group was basically skimming money off the top. My dad got pissed about that.
So were the congas in the house?
Congas were in the house.
During your boyhood.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I know there are traditions in Cuba that are family. Like, you're going to do... my grandfather did this, I did this.
Yeah.
Did you ever get the talk like that?
Well, I played around with him, and I played around with his music and stuff, and obviously grew up with it. He came out of Stan Kenton's group, he toured over here. That's how he made it out here to the West Coast from the East Coast, is he toured out here with Stan Kenton and saw Hermosa Beach and went, this is where I want to live. This reminds me of... my hometown.
Hermosa means beautiful.
Well, yeah, it's beautiful.
So you mean you went on the congas just mess around on your own? You weren't really encouraged to do it?
No, my dad wasn't. He didn't push stuff on it. The one thing he did push on me was baseball.
Okay. Did you hear a lot of Cuban records in the pad?
Oh yeah.
Okay, so that music was.
Oh yeah, it was prevalent.
Do you remember the first record you bought?
The first record I bought that I owned was.
Well, you bought.
Yeah.
You might own it. You could have gave it away.
I want to say it was Led Zeppelin. I think
which
it was
one? Put out a couple. Okay, too hard.
I can't remember.
Did you have music in school?
Yes, I did take music in school.
It was a class?
And
what'd you play?
I played drums.
Like a track kit?
Like a kit. Well, it was just a snap.
Ah, so it's like classical music.
Yeah, like a big, band, sure. So
I remember sometimes there was jazz bands at school. When was this? Junior
it was
high?
Just, no, it was elementary school.
And I know about Hermos. They do have some grade schools, but they don't have high school, Brother Matt.
No.
They got to use Dondor
Yeah, Redondo or Costa.
Costa, yeah. Like Raymond, yeah.
At both the schools I went to and Hermosa are closed down now.
The little ones.
South Elementary's gone.
So, because people out there, I know Oral's a basement. How'd that happen?
Well, I really got to listening to music when I was in high school, and I started going to concerts and stuff like that, but the one bass player that caught my attention was Stanley Clark. I started listening to progressive jazz back in the early 70s, mid-70s.
Well, Return to Forever, he's on that record.
Return to Forever.
I graduated high school, and that was the big record.
And that was something that me and Tom Watson got into. We were really listening to that kind of stuff back then.
See, being here now, though.
Focus. But,
you heard Stanley Clark, you want to get a bass. Would you ask your pop to buy a bass? Bass is big in Cuban music.
I actually went on my own.
Chaco.
Yeah. I went to a pawn shop in Torrance and bought my first bass. It was a Fender copy. It was a piece of crap, but it was what it was.
And you bought it yourself.
Bought it myself.
Because most cats, it seems, the parents buy it, they say, if I'm buying you this, you're taking lessons.
Because when I went to play the drums, I went to a music store to get a snare drum.
Yeah.
And the guy talked my mom out of it, and I ended up getting a pad instead of pissed
Practice
me off.
Pad.
Yeah. So that's about. So I went and bought my own bass because I knew.
Didn't you get an amp?
I didn't have an amp at first.
Okay. That's trippy when you got an electric instrument without an amp.
Yeah.
And especially with a bass. I only had so much money. No, I understand. Hey, I'm with you. I did the same thing.
Yeah.
No sense of deep notes.
No. But I had a
still pair. Working the fingers, and because the strings are really big on a bass, people, so you do have to build up something.
Yeah.
Even though Brother Earl's kind of a big man.
I had a pair of headphones that I could stick in there, and I could hear myself.
Okay. Do you remember the first, jamming with other people besides, Man Alone?
Yes. That was with some friends of mine from high school.
Okay.
And we just started messing around with just covers. We're just doing covers.
Copy records, just like...
Yeah, and just learning our instruments, basically, by... emulating
what
you heard.
Now, I know you as the second bass player at Sacrament Trust.
Mm-hmm.
And how'd that happen?
Well,
the Pedro guy, right? Los Louis was the...
Right, Louis Maldonado, yeah.
Well, we knew him as Los Louis, and then there's a middle name, Mad Max.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I guess he was born with Louis Maldonado. Maybe that's his first name.
So at the time, we were... it was Rob... Tom Watson and I were priests. It was a pre-slovenly band. We were kind of messing around with stuff.
Slovenly, Toxic Shock is pre-slovenly.
Yeah,
some of that.
Because they actually played at the Star Theater with Minutemen.
Yeah, and so I was
maybe even Capone's.
It's
not anymore. I think what do they sell? Surf clothes or nothing? It's all caged up. Someone was murdered on that roof. That place was always. Jinxed. Yeah, it was the Blue Viking, the Three Bees or something. It had a bunch of names. So the rumor was someone was murdered on the roof.
Yeah.
So, but it was Tom Watson playing. I think his parents had to get,
we practiced at his house. And OJ and Eileen were awesome. They let us do whatever we want, played all day.
This is next door, Manhattan Beach.
Yeah, Manhattan Beach. And then
the signs go from brown to blue.
To blue, yes,
Artesia
exactly.
Artesia Boulevard, people. Also, the name goes from PCH to Sepulveda.
Did you know you sound
it's like here when Alma goes to band six where I live. Why? Okay.
Anyway, okay.
How did the sack give you the nod?
Well, that has to
do with Bob. Oh, because Bobby's the second drummer.
Bobby was in there. And
no, there's a guy, Rich Wilder, a Pedro guy first.
Yeah, right.
He's on this, Cracks in the Sidewalk.
Yeah.
It's that trippy song.
Hearts and Barbarians.
Kind of tippy tap.
Yeah.
Hearts and Barbarians.
Sweet guy. Went to high school with his brother, Rick Wilder. Michael, I think the older brother, turned into a priest.
Oh.
Sweet guy, too. And then there was two twins that were younger. The Wilders. Right over here, Carolina in 39 or something. Kind of bohemian. So that's how you got into the power of the connect.
Yeah, Rob was in.
I played with Lewis for a little while.
Yeah.
Okay.
Rob,
and also you're connected with
Tom Watson.
Yeah.
And then Lewis was telling the band that he wanted out, and Rob said, hey, I know this guy who could probably fill in.
Yeah.
And I came over and practiced with him. And
I remember the third guy was a dude named Mark, maybe Strongbeam.
Yes.
That's Mark right. Nice guy.
Mark Hudson.
Tall, too. Not as tall as you, but tall.
Yeah.
Okay, man. That,
And that's how I made an attack trust.
And that's up to the point where I met you. So yeah. Noel, start. No, I don't think I ever met you, so you got to start from the beginning. Noel?
Yeah.
Okay. Your oldest music memory?
I think that would have to be in Hawthorne, my grandparents' house.
They crossed town.
They always had like an organ or music, something, guitars in the house. And
so you had people making music in your house?
Yeah. My grandma was a huge influence. She was... Like, she danced with Shirley Temple back in the day, in her day, and, you know, she was always kind of brought up in the music atmosphere and stuff like that. She really, really was huge influence on me.
You know, hey, you're going to play, you're going to take piano lessons?
Had me playing guitar lessons.
What was that influence? Because some of our guests, it was really bad. They hated music because of that shit. She found music again by avant-garde in college days because... Her early lessons, I was like beating on the wrist with the knuckles with the rulers.
I think I enjoyed it as a kid.
Or folk music. Like, I don't want to learn Jingle Bells or shit.
It seems like all the stuff that I learned when I was a kid, though, like learning how to play piano and play the guitar and stuff, I don't really do that anymore.
Do you remember the first record you bought, Noel?
Man, thinking that I was... Well, I remember I used to steal my mom's Rolling Stones album and take them to school.
That's kind of like buying them.
I think the first album that I purchased myself was the Suicidal Tendencies album.
Oh, the Pepsi?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's the first.
My mom's in that one. Yeah, that's a trick. I think Frank Zappa's got a song, Get Me a Pepsi. Get up the cat beef heart, never called his ma. You know, always by her first name. Yeah. Her name was Sue. He wrote a song, Get Me a Pepsi, Sue, because he was always hearing it. You know, they grew up together. He was always hearing that, Get Me a Pepsi, Sue.
Crazy.
His mom. That's funny, because Mike Muir, right? That's all he wants is Pepsi. Pepsi's a heavy thing.
I remember just recording 8-track tapes off of the radio all the time. Get different shows.
You recorded on 8-track?
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Because there wasn't a lot of 8-track recorders. There's cassette. There was a few, but not much.
Yeah, my mom's ex-husband.
I remember 8-tracks. You could play them in the car.
Yeah.
And they did sound better than the cassettes, but they would...
Whatever the middle
total eighth was, divided by 4, that's when it was clicked.
You'd hear a song that would stop.
Actually, there was 4 programs, but stereo, so 8-tracks. Okay.
Nobody
had copyright in the name. Did you do music at school?
What was your school? I went to Cashmere Middle School in Torrance.
Oh, okay.
I wanted to play the saxophone, but they made me play the clarinet.
Exactly with me.
Yeah.
I took it, it was called elective, you get 10 weeks.
Yeah, exactly.
So I got the liquor stick, and then 10 weeks, his name was Mr. Lewis.
I think mine was Mr. Ross, back there.
He gave a speech in front of the class, he goes, I know you try hard, but you should stop wasting your time, and my time, and our time, and whoa. I was beat down, so I never did school music again.
I think I did it in the 6th grade, and that was it.
That was it?
Yep.
So you had some exposure.
Yeah.
Yeah, mine was 7. Do you remember your first band?
First band was PKG.
Okay.
How did you
get together?
A bunch of high school kids.
Yeah.
And actually, I was the second singer because when we were seniors in high school, the original singer, Steve Cedillo, he ended up moving to Florida.
Okay.
And so they needed a guy.
Yeah.
And I actually had an extra room in my house.
Yeah, another
so
good reason.
So we just bought all the stuff over there. And my mom let us practice whenever we wanted after school.
Steve Singer guy, I heard that he had a van, and that's...
Yeah.
I didn't even hear the guy sing or something. But he's at the boat in the PA.
We end up having this skateboard ramp in the backyard and then band playing in the back room. And
what's your age with these guys?
I'm 48.
And they're?
56.
Yeah, so 8 years?
55.
For Tom Watson's age. He just had it, right?
Yeah.
Double nickels.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just double nickels last week.
Oh, wow. All right. Bitching. Okay, what happened to PKG? What's that stand for?
Poor Kids on Glue. Oh,
of course. So it wasn't Peacock. You got rid of the yellow. You lost the yellow.
It kind of resonated into this band called The Resolutions, which I actually just finished up a EP recording for last weekend. Yeah.
Bitchin'.
So we've been doing that for a long time.
And how did you meet these guys?
I've known John McCree, the guitar player, for... since we were in high school playing.
So John's a cadet.
Playing just in other bands together.
Sorry, not too bad.
And Rob as well. I knew Rob from other punk bands in the area.
Oh, so he was a cadet too.
Just like Landfill when he was in Landfill.
Steve.
Right.
And then.
Several bass players.
And then I just met Earl through Once Per Mile right
now.
Yeah,
two.
I've been at least two because I remember playing with you with different bass guys.
Right, right.
But it was always you and Steve Lynn.
Yeah.
Landfill. Yeah. Rafter Underpants. Overpass.
Underpants.
That's Tom Watson, people. Overpass. Overpass. Okay. Bobby, oldest musical member?
Records. From my parents and my brother.
So it's in the house.
Yeah, in the house.
Rob Brothers gets the records, puts the rock and roll.
Back east in New York.
Okay. What part?
I do remember seeing York, a George Harrison, Bangladesh, and there was a bag in there of prod, weed.
Yeah.
And it tripped me out.
Well, that's a three-record thing, so there's actually two. You can clean two sacks.
Yeah.
What part of New York, Bob?
Westchester County, Armagh, New York.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Then, and so, besides the moto, you were digging the tunes, the sounds?
Yeah, I didn't do the moto.
Was there music in the house? Did he play guitar or some shit?
No, there were no musical instruments.
Just listeners.
Just listening. And then,
oh, no, you probably played the radio.
Yeah, mostly like 45 The Doors, Rolling Stones, not too much Zeppelin. That's all I can remember. And then I moved out here.
Did you buy a record out there? What was your first record you bought? Did you just bother?
It was out here. Robin Trower, Bridge of Sighs.
Oh, Bridge of Sighs.
Yeah, and Black Sabbath.
Okay.
Master of Reality.
That had to be second.
Yeah.
First.
Yeah. Okay. My brother.
You got both at the same time.
My brother turned me onto it, and then I went out.
Yeah, so he was the, like...
Yeah, he was the main dude.
Gateways.
Right.
My toll booth monitor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Did you do music in school?
I did. Actually, in New York, where I first started hearing music through records, I did some little piano lessons.
Okay.
And I bailed on it because I didn't like it.
See? That happens.
And then, seventh grade, did clarinet.
Yeah, liquor stick.
Bailed on it, didn't like it. Yeah.
You picked it, though, or they put you on it?
They put me on it. Okay. They suggested
it. It's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough. Reed.
Yeah.
Who's the big daddy? Artie Shaw. One of his sons called me. I guess he's a big tattoo man, right? John Shaw. Early on. Yeah, they are. He was traveling across the country with a U-Haul full of machine guns or something accidentally. So, the first band you were
in? The Jetsons with Earl.
Okay.
Well, he was... That was the first band he mentioned. Well, he was in The Suspects. Okay. And then the Jetsons were playing at the same time, so it was kind of like a rival.
Now you're talking piano, clarinet. How'd the drums happen?
Drums happened by hanging around Toxic Shock, and Tom and I were real good friends back then.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, we are. And Bruce Lawson and Tom, I used to hang around, go to gigs, and... Bruce was playing drums, and I'd watch him play, so then I'd sit behind his kit, and I kind of picked it up pretty quick.
Okay, okay.
And then Tom talked me into buying his kit.
Tom had a drum set?
Hmm?
Or Bruce's?
I bought Bruce's set.
Okay. Tom says, hey, why don't you buy Bruce's? Why?
Right, right.
Hey, guys.
And then I asked him, what, you know,
you didn't want to play with Bruce anymore.
They played with Bruce in early Slovenly.
Yeah, but he wanted you on the drums.
No, that came later. That came later than Slovenly.
Actually. No, I'm talking about when you get this drum set. You said Tom talked you into getting it.
Right, and then me and him jammed in my bedroom while my parents were on vacation.
Yeah.
And they came home, they were cool about it. And we called ourselves the Essentials. It was just Tom and I.
Yeah.
Then it turned into Jetsons later on.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the connect with Earl was...
Yeah, it started Jetsons, then, yeah. Right?
Okay.
That was with Dennis Jarvis as singer. He's the surf guy. He did spider surfboards down in Hermosa.
Wow.
Yeah.
Small world.
Yeah.
Small town.
Crazy.
Small town. Okay. John, your earliest music memory.
My dad used to have a quarter-inch reel-to-reel, and he loved Count Basie. And he fucking played.
So you're hitting the count and the pad.
Like, nonstop. My mother was on the other spectrum. It's like Fleetwood Mac and Michael McDonald.
Nobody's playing. There's just records.
Yeah, there's just records. No one played instruments.
Do you remember the first record you bought?
I don't want to say. It was a kids record.
Okay, which one?
I'm not even sure which one. I think it was Destroyer or something.
Fourth one. Fifth one.
No, it's my first record.
No, but this is the fifth kids record.
Yeah. Yeah, Destroyer was.
Yeah, he's testing you. Okay, what about in school? Did you do music in school?
I tried, and then it wasn't as easy as I thought it was going to be. Well, I took lessons. I wasn't really in school. I wasn't forced to play anything.
Okay. So this is outside of school. And what lessons at what?
Guitar.
Oh, okay.
And it wasn't easy, so I quit.
But what was it? Like, did you buy the guitar? Was it
my parents did exactly what you said.
Yeah.
They bought me a guitar.
Well, a lot of cats, I hear this story on the
bought me an amp. I sat down. I couldn't, you know, play kids.
You didn't like the material he was teaching you.
Yeah, but it wasn't easy.
You want to say his name? Do you know his name?
You know what?
It's okay.
I don't even remember.
It's okay. So, but what, you didn't sell it?
I did.
Oh, you did?
I didn't. I was in elementary school when that happened. And then I didn't even start playing guitar until I was 14.
Okay.
So.
But with that same guitar now?
Nope.
No, because it's gone.
It's gone.
Okay. Would you sell it for shit? Or?
Probably some crap. Yeah.
But you pick it up in junior high, right?
Yeah.
Okay. What? You buy another amp? You buy a guitar?
I bought a guitar. I saw someone playing and they taught me one little thing, like Red Barchetta on the guitar. And I was like.
But now this time I want to learn it.
Yeah, and I did.
So, a few years makes a big difference.
It really does. You know, I just...
Sure.
Just took it out.
And you remember your first guys you played with?
Yeah, they were all...
Which town is this?
Hermosa Beach.
It's Hermosa?
By the time I was starting
a band. But you didn't know these guys, even though it's a tiny-ass town. Okay.
No.
But Pedro's like that, too.
By the time I was starting a band, it was just friends in high school, and, you know...
But not their friends.
No.
Okay.
No. So, right. We just... You know,
what's your age? Are you close?
47.
Ah, you're younger.
Yeah.
Okay.
You wouldn't think.
You're more Noel's age.
Yeah.
But he's in Hawthorne. Right.
Torrance.
At that time.
Yeah. North Torrance. Yeah.
Yeah. So you weren't geographically.
Right. But
you were age wise.
Yeah. But we did end up hooking up later. Yeah. We did.
Well, of course, because now you got a band. I know it came together somehow.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get the connect how it happened.
So you're at North, you said? North High?
North High, yeah. Mm-hmm.
We're gonna play. No, it wasn't Fight the Good Fight. It was what a dumb. We're gonna listen to. I'm a dumb fuck, people. We're gonna listen to Fight the Good Fight. Now, the first one we heard was Kicking Rocks.
Kicking Rocks.
Kicking Rocks.
Yeah. Okay. So that's what you already heard, people. Now we're gonna hear Fight the Good Fight. Bob Pedrosian.
Thank you. debajo de tu vestido lloran las altas esferas, huyen las fieras panteras hacia tus cerros dormidos. Debajo de tu vestido los planetas desmadejan el dolor de este destino que unas garras despellejan. En el aire entrometido entre tu cuerpo y tu vestido, donde sueñan las antenas, ya no quedan ni las hienas que se ríen de mí. Y se ríen de mí. Y se ríen de mí. Y se ríen. Se tararean las huellas de animales compungidos de tanta tinta de estrella. Debajo de tu vestido no hay antenas, ni panteras, ni planetas que se han hundido con el grito del aire.
Pedro Show started off that chunk with this is their debut EP, people. What's it called? Kickin' Rocks?
Kickin' Rocks.
All right. Yeah. And but this too was Fight the Good Fight. What's it about?
No.
No?
Fight the Good Fight.
I mean, I know it's that's been around. Like, if you're going to fight, make it count for something.
Well, we lost a lot of friends from cancer at the end of last year and the beginning of this year, and this is kind of like a dedication
to
them. Yeah.
Killed my pop, all my grandparents. Yeah. My mom was fighting that. They cut it out of her, but...
Yeah, we have friends going through it as well right now, so, I mean,
her brother and my uncle... Yep. He calls it the big casino. He lives in Peoria, Illinois.
The big casino?
Yeah, casino.
The big casino. Yeah.
It's a big casino.
Yeah.
Okay. I liked it a lot. And by the way, I like the band. I haven't seen you play yet, though. Bobby won't let me know when the gigs are.
Come on now. It's on Facebook, man. We post our stuff on Facebook.
Yeah, but why don't you tell why?
I know. You don't use a Facebook
for... sometimes I'll make a thing. Something against Klan.
The fake look?
Or Shitter. Or Shitter. And, Instant Ham, right?
Yeah.
Shitter, Instant Ham, and fake look.
Instant
Ham. What do you call it? Well, I look at them as like telephone poles and put up flyers.
Yeah, right.
So, but pull me a flyer to the white. You got
all
the
Bofus. Right, I got your email.
The Bofus telephone pole. Out of the lap. Okay, now let's get down to 1 square mile. People... Hermosa Beach is a small town. I didn't know it was exactly that small.
1.4327 square miles.
Oh, so it's a little more than that.
A little more.
We
rounded it down.
Okay, but let's talk about how the band gets together.
Okay. Well, so I haven't been playing for quite some time, and
since Sack Days.
Yeah.
Or Circle Jerks.
Circle Jerks. Yeah. Spring of the day before Easter '84 was the last gig I played at Perkins Palace.
Yeah,
I put my bass down, and I hadn't played it until I did a Sacred Trust reunion show at the Liquid Kitty a few years back. But I was starting to go to gigs again, and ran into John and Rob at a off show, particularly, and he started kicking around the idea of jamming, you know, and so I kind of was reluctant, you know. I didn't have a lot of equipment at the time. I kind of let everything go. I had still had my bass from Sack Trust days and Circle Jerks and whatnot, and I just had it refurbished, and I was thinking about getting back into it, but, you know, I was a little hesitant, feeling rusty, but they were pretty persistent on wanting to make this happen, so we set a date. Packed my equipment up and went down to Abalone Studios down in Hermosa Beach, and then we all plugged in and we looked at each other and said, "Now what?" we didn't have anything, so we just jammed.
But how would the dudes pick? Were you the meister?
No. John.
Is it a lotto?
We just all met at a couple of gigs, and Rob had introduced me to John. John asked me if I wanted to get back in the plane. And there's the trio right there, and we just said, okay, let's take the three of us and go into the studio and see what happens. And so we started to just jam. We started, you know, getting some practice time once a week just to feel each other out. And then John would start writing pieces and sending them to me through the computer, and then I would listen to them, play them while I was at home, bring it back to the studio. We'd get together and we'd file share. And then we'd have something going on, and then we started building songs on that, and it just started building and building and building. It got better and better and better.
But they're a trio. No, you're...
Joel's not in yet.
Yeah, you bring come in later.
This time, we were just really... Because he hadn't played for so long, so it was just playing together and getting his stamina.
Getting rudiments.
And just chops. And the parts, you know, weren't... I didn't plan on having songs out of them. You know, I knew they were going to just be like... You know, you're just kind of... Just... getting your strength up, you know.
Just
what I mean?
Just structures,
yeah. Just structures, nothing. And then once we got Noel in the band, it was like
now we're gonna write like real tunes.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, I'm just interested in the process.
By that point, we did have 5 structured tunes together. I mean, actual.
And you connect with John.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So as you get your thing back together,
I've been hitting John
well,
up
well, first thing you were
years.
Doing probably was you learning the sax songs to do the reunion.
Was doing that, yeah.
So and then we're doing the jams just to get up. And then as he gets...
Knocking
like,
my rust off.
Competent enough, right. You bring in Noel. Okay.
Yeah.
And Bobby, you're the whole time during this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. What was the first song, One Square Mile song, that you played together?
Judge, Jury, and Executioner.
Yeah, that's coming up in the second hour. And in fact... We're at that time.
Uh-huh.
It's the first hour of Watford Pedro Show, July 11, 2017 edition with One Square Mile from HB, not yeah. the one that starts with an A, right? They always spelled it A-I-T-C-H. No, the Orange County one?
Yeah, the Orange County one.
Yeah, did you ever guys have the thing with that? Like, why is it two HB?
Now we're the yeah. HB with the little B.
Ah, okay. Anyway, hold tight for our two. July 11th, 2017, the second hour. Watch the Pedro Show.
but the rules of rock and roll said that English language put the songs to a higher level. Saying is it what would you deal with for seafair? But a lot of people love to tell. They like the melody as well. I love the words, I love to tell. So here's a melody to spell. Le sujet de cette chanson. Mais s'il vous plaît, excusez du peu. J'ai bien cherché, mais j'ai pas trouvé.
advocates for special interests. This should not be a Democratic issue or a Republican issue.
If we are going to maintain a true democracy in this country, it is absolutely imperative that we overturn this disastrous decision on Citizens United.
There are certain judges who are alleging that somehow corporations have the same rights as citizens. I don't accept that premise.
The Supreme Court has unleashed a flood of secret corporate money into our political system. 32 people spent slightly more on the 2012 election than 3.7 million typical Americans.
The billionaire class not only controls the economy, but controls the political life of this country. Why do people like the Koch brothers spend hundreds of millions of dollars? They have an agenda, and it is an agenda of the very wealthy and for the very wealthy.
Watch for Pedro show. Let's start off the second hour with Judge Jury
Executioner.
And we were relating off air people's stories about that. That we heard about in real life. What was the first gig?
First gig we played was...
One Square Mile.
Yeah, it was at the Saloon in Hermosa. Was basically our kickoff weekend. We had a gig on a Friday night, Saturday night, and a Sunday afternoon. And we just came out one day and just said, okay, this is what we're going to do. So we had a kickoff show at the Saloon in Hermosa, which was great. It turned out great.
For you, was it scary?
That's
playing to about 30...
I was somewhat nervous when I did the Sack and Trust reunion,
but I'd played
those songs before, and this one meant a little bit more to me because it was something that I started from the ground up. It wasn't like I came in as the second bass player of a band, you know. And,
that's what I mean.
And this
that's
is
what I mean.
That,
so was it kind of scary?
Yeah, it was. I'm not gonna lie about
that. Every gig.
I mean, you know what? The way I looked at it, this way, I just said, you know, I told John that I was nervous, but I said I'd be dead if I wasn't. You know, I mean, why? You, that's what it's all about, is that excitement. You know.
How about you, Noah? What was the gig like?
It was awesome. I mean, yeah, the nervous energy and the build up to the gig was great, and I think
you brought supporters.
Oh yeah.
Place was packed out.
Yeah,
we had.
Well, sometimes it's packed, but it's you just waiting for Jovi.
I think we put enough stuff out there where it became there was a lot of anticipation for us to finally break out and people to hear what our music was like.
Now, right away, did you think there's something we can do better? Did you think that? No.
I didn't.
After the first show? Well, as far
or
as...
during it.
Well...
No, you don't have... You can say no, because I already start editing myself. Mm-hmm. This fucking gig is going.
No, I mean, it was great. I didn't think it could get any better at that time.
What was
the gig like for you?
The nerves were set in because I knew a ton of people there.
Yeah.
It was packed out.
Yeah.
And it was my first gig with a new band.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's always a trip right there.
But you kept at it. You kept playing all these years.
Yeah, yeah.
Little sparks of holes.
Right.
You kept at it. But this was still scary, right?
It was, yeah. You know, wondering how people would dig us.
Did you do the Blue Vista Light kit?
Nah, yes I did.
Think about that for a second.
Yeah, I had to think about
Remember
that.
Remember the Monty Python? What's your favorite color? Broken round blue. Right, that's a big question to get across the bridge, and the guy don't know his own favorite color. Actually, it goes back before that. There was a Cheech and Chong record, right? Let's make a drug deal. Like, what's your name? Yeah. Come on, Bob.
Well, I had the other
set. He doesn't know his own fucking name.
I had the other set for a while.
And then he picks the wrong door, and it's Officer Kadinsky Kowalski or some shit.
Studenko.
Studenko. Wow. A young man hand me the knife. You didn't memorize him fucking
right? No, what man?
I'm not saying it was like that, one. But were you thinking of clams?
Oh, yeah.
Glare in your eye?
Yeah, it's kind of dark. I can't see your face. I just see a silhouette.
Okay. Witness protection program.
Yeah, you know,
sometimes, what do you think? If you worry about clams, more clams come?
Yeah, I think so. We got into the first song, and that was cool, the first two songs, and then I felt more comfortable.
Okay.
You
know? Once you got into it. John, what about you? What was the gig like?
You know, it was really packed, and I'm in another band at the same time, and everybody's waiting to see if you shit the bed, you know? Because there was a lot of hype.
Yeah.
And it was way better than I expected.
Okay.
You know, I mean, it just, we actually gelled. That's the thing. Like, you play with guys and you want to know if it's going to be good.
There's practice, but the real practice, put it in front of people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is the EP before the first gig or after?
Recorded before we even played a gig.
No, that's all right.
Yeah.
I mean, the EP was recorded in January, and we didn't gig until
mid-May.
Yeah, middle of May. So, you know,
there was a Blue Oyster Cult song called The Last Days of May. A lot of times we play it when it's The Last Days of May.
And then the other thing was is we had to build a set list, too. I mean, we couldn't just do
five songs.
No, you're not going to do five songs. I mean,
you could do them five times each.
you could, but I probably wouldn't go over very well.
What's that called? Reprise? The reprise?
Yeah. So it took us a little bit to build.
So you had to muster more material for a set, yeah.
You know, and we don't play.
And what is it different than the five from the EP? How many came after? 10?
We've got another eight.
Seven now.
Yeah, there's 12 tunes. And are those seven different than the five? Same vein, probably.
Somewhat. I mean,
it's only like 4 or 5 months different space.
No.
Oh, no. You recorded in January, but when did you start working on those guys? During the winter and fall?
Right. During that time.
He got in the band in November of last year.
Yeah, I just got in the band.
So in 2 months you record.
We just kind of set a goal.
Yeah, sure.
And then just, you couldn't.
Look, you know Band of Gypsies, right?
Yeah.
That's the second set of the first gig. New Year's Eve at Madison Square Garden, talking about the fresh. I mean, shit in a pecan log. Kind of like Harold's Place, but
different.
Don't shoot him down!
It has a bigger backstage.
Right?
No.
Yeah.
It's trippy about that. And then what was the next, what was the second gig?
Second gig was this following day.
You're on tour.
Yeah, so the second day was the following day in Venice. We played at the first annual Hardcore Fest in Venice.
And
it was at an Eagles
decoration of the Eagles.
Ah, yeah, one of them Fraternal Lodge.
Yeah.
Like Flag's first gig was Moose Lodge, right? With the Alley Cats. And
yeah,
in the old days, they didn't do bands. They made little things.
Yeah.
We got one right over here called the Improved Order of the Red Man.
Yeah.
But in this day, like, native guys couldn't even join it.
you guys had the Elks Lodge got burnt down.
Yeah, man.
This order here?
It's supposed to open up soon.
Really?
Actually, that's up on the hill.
Yeah.
What you're talking about. But over there was the old Y. It's a metal place now. But this right here, a couple doors down, it's got back to the Revolution and the East Coast and stuff. And the big assembly man, I don't know, 35 years, Vincent Thomas, originally Vincent Thomas, she was a big daddy there. Wow. Now they do open mic night.
Yeah.
See, it's called Repurpose, right? Mm-hmm. Like where I crack, that was Officer's Head at Fort MacArthur.
They got a new pool.
It's a little separate. It's hard to park it back. There's turf.
Oh, the one that just opened up there.
It's got to have that stupid name.
You,
in the old days, I never could see it because it's up on the hill, but it was Gaffey Street Pool, and I could always hear them.
They just opened it, right?
Yeah.
No, not more than that, dude. They rebuilt it. It's nothing like the old.
$7 million.
I saw a picture.
Well, the money came out of the settlement for the. They did some harbor building without an environmental impact, so there was a fine levy. And the pool can be rebuilt. It was huge graffiti memorial. But when I was younger, you could hear that. That's where all these guys. Me and D-Boom, there's a pool in Peck Park. That's where I'll tell you, man, your eyes. So many dudes pissed in that. Bright red, like, boom. Where you go, brother Matt? It's time for your spin cyclage. Oh, okay. The graffiti, and then the smell. So they redid that whole thing. It hadn't been used for 20 years.
Yeah. Peck Park Pool just got shut down because it busted. Here's what it was looking like.
Was there a repair, right?
Yeah. So, wow. Yeah, that's what it had been looking like for 4 years.
And the smell, you know, from paint.
Yeah.
Ooh, my park pad's right near that, but there's a fence because this is actually Los Angeles Parks and Recreations. And we're called the Angel Gate Culture Center. When they closed down the upper reservation for MacArthur, they gave it to the city for arts. We did have a turf war with them, but we won out, and I've had that pad set for 37 years.
Whoa.
Yeah. Not like a good prac pad, right? You can't use Bobby Ho's parents' pad forever.
No, we're here.
Or Tom Watson's pad, right?
We're here at Pedro now.
No, but that's a whole thing.
We're at Harbor Boulevard and
We're at the Coos.
Coos.
Yeah.
14th Street and Beacon.
Yeah, in the building.
Yeah.
Paul Nichols Institute. Uh-huh. One time D. Boom worked there doing their van pool.
Uh-huh.
And he did other things too, little small jobs. And he was getting rid of weeds. Not a whacker, but like manual. Right? It's not electric.
Yeah.
And I think Tukowski got a mohawk, so D. Boom got one.
Hmm.
So some lady across the street called a policeman and said there was a crazy man attacking the building. He was just doing his job. Some of those van pool rides, because they had something down in by San Diego or something, he would write little things. You know, if the song had rhyming words, I would never get them. But if they were little jotting downs, like, let the product sell themselves, you know, fuck advertising. That's the words he'd give me.
Uh-huh.
So those songs were... Georgie's too, kind of subconscious while he's working on the lathe.
Yeah.
That's the songs I got from my guys.
I saw George yesterday.
Here?
In Ramosa. I saw George.
Really? Because he moved back to Pedro.
Yeah, he was over there practicing yesterday.
Wow.
Yeah, just randomly. I don't know, some guys, they were...
The Barbers?
Yeah. I guess.
Oh,
that Bowman and them?
Yeah,
Bowman.
That was from the other wife's friends, right? And
I think so.
Yeah, that was Dondo guys.
Yeah.
Yes.
Along, because the first thing he did was Dez, Vita.
Oh, right.
But then he was in Pedro just playing with blues guys for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I
didn't know that. Good news. I see him here, he took surfing back up. He's down, I see him down surfing. It's good shape.
Looks good.
Yeah, looks real good. Anyway, it's an honor and privilege, Brother Matt, to have you back.
Cool.
With the Spin Cycle.
Sweet.
Está cambiando. When the road ahead has stopped and what's behind has disappeared, don't look back. Remember your fear. Keep pushing on to get to what's really real, 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 really real. Really real. Really real. This is what you feel.
Thank
Frida. You so much, Brother Matt, for doing what you just did to us.
Cool.
Please tell us why, enlighten us to why.
That was inspired by Licking the Crack by Frida. And prior to that, it was the One Square Mile crew and their influences that got me going.
Yeah,
it was that, with the Buena Vista Social Club, some Dave Cortez with the Happy Oregon. Sorry, have any or Count no. Basie, sorry about that.
No Basie, but he's bad. Red Bank.
Yep.
He's bad. The Count. We're at the end of the second hour. July 11, 2017, just Walk Pedro Show, special guest, One Square Mile from Hermosa Beach.
Yeah.
Hold tight for hour three. June 11, 2017, is the third hour of Walk Pedro Show. Our show started off the third hour with One Square Mile doing Dying Breed off their Kickin' Rocks debut EP. What's the label, sorry?
Felony Records.
Felony, right. Felony Records, people. And where can people find you on the internet?
We'll be on iTunes and Spotify pretty soon.
But is there a site?
Not
we're
like
just fucking kinda paste shit on fake shit.
Yeah,
fake
we're just, okay. Yeah.
It's on Bandcamp.
Let's talk about
there's a Bandcamp.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's on Bandcamp. YouTube. Yeah. There's some stuff on YouTube as well.
And there's some YouTube videos. What, those gigs?
Yeah.
The firsties?
Some videos. And
Shooters.
A couple songs.
Let's talk. You know, we played Dying Breed when we were talking about like 34 years.
Mm.
Earl, tell me difference for you.
Difference?
The scene. You're witness to both times.
Yeah. I mean, it's. I mean, definitely, there's still some people from that scene still around. There's some who passed. As far as it being different, I mean, obviously, being younger and having a lot of energy and whatnot, you're out there every night doing something.
But it was smaller, right? More intimate?
It
got big.
Well,
back, it wasn't like that in those days.
Well, back then it was everything that I did. I mean, everything was about the scene because I didn't have any responsibilities back then. I was playing music and that was it. Now I'm a big boy now. I've grown up a little bit.
I'm asking you looking at the scene.
Looking at it.
I understand you.
Yeah.
You almost come full circle. Now you're going to have some fun again with music. But I'm talking about the scene since you're witnesses to both. Points 34 years in between.
It's somewhat different, for sure. I mean, I think
Broadway. Doesn't Green Day have a Broadway musical? That wasn't going on 34 years.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, that's. I'm not gonna down any bands.
I'm not downing. I'm just saying what's it.
It's yeah. I mean, I would think it's a definitely more acceptable style of music these days.
So in those days, it was a little more dangerous, you're saying?
I don't think people really understood it. I mean, there was definitely, yes, what you were saying, there was definitely a smaller crowd.
So people knew each other?
Exactly. It's broader now.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously,
but also people can talk about, in those days, we didn't have internet, so you couldn't really get with a, the only way I knew about Austin scene was a fanzine, right?
Fanzine.
Yeah.
Flipside, right?
Jimmy O'Hanlon with the Maximum Rock and Roll. They had scene reports.
Talking to people on the phone.
Or touring,
that was it.
It was hard to really know about the other scenes, right? I think we know more about each other's scenes now.
Exactly, it's easier now.
Right.
What would you say the difference is?
I think back in the day it was a little more intimate. I mean, everybody, like where the parties were, I mean, everybody was there, the bands, Yeah, I think
there was less bands, right?
Yeah, there's a lot less, for sure. Lot less bands.
I think it was more expensive, harder to record back then. It's way easier now.
Yeah,
it's better.
And now, like way easier. Earl said, it seems like it's more acceptable everywhere.
With the square people, the straight people.
Yeah.
Bobby,
different group.
Yeah, what's been said, like Hollywood had the Hollywood weirdo scene, and then a little bit of a scene down here.
Yeah.
Now it seems to be all over.
Oh, OCS scene.
Coach, yeah.
Dickies were from the Val.
Right.
They're doing their 40-year tour.
Yeah.
40 years.
Not on the work. Not on the work tour.
But back there, did you imagine there'd be a 40-year for these bands? It seemed like the scene was going to burn, right?
I don't think I looked that far ahead. I just think we were just in the moment.
I just couldn't imagine. Yeah, I didn't.
We were just in the moment.
I mean,
we all just played for what it was.
John, what do you think?
If you can go buy your docks at fucking Nordstrom and your punk patches at fucking CBS, it's not punk anymore.
Oh, no punk. So it has changed.
It is.
In those days, people made their things more, right?
Well,
thrift store stuff and you customize
it.
Yeah.
It wasn't accepted. And, if you're a punker and somebody sees you on the street, they're all...
Yeah. I remember that.
Called out.
It's Devo. More loose.
Huh? Being yelled at Devo. Yeah, that happened.
That's happened here in Pedro. Yeah. One time I was talking with the Mark Mothers brother, saying, yeah. Everybody tells me about that.
Yeah. I remember.
No, because the square guys, but it was funny, a couple of them, maybe even jocks, a couple of years later, they're painting their fingernails.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny how humans are like
that. It changes. It's definitely changed. You saw that happen back then in the early 80s.
So what do you think the challenge is then? Probably to get creative with the art form. Make your band sound like it. When they hear it, they know it. For example, this might be a weird example. Terrible host with the least post. Like Burl Ives, you're gonna know that voice.
Oh yeah,
Big Daddy too, and Cat on a Hot Tin Riff. Big Freemason interest. Yeah. I mean, you can tell that's Burl Ives, right? There's something about that voice.
Sure.
I think that's where we got to go, because obviously the uniforms got co-opted.
Right. Yeah.
Like you said, what was the store?
Nordstrom's.
Boosh.
Right.
Oh.
You can buy anything.
What about this store? Have you heard of? Okay.
I've done some Warped Tour gigs, and one time there was a stage called the Hot Topic, and I go to the boss, Kevin Lyman, and man, D Boom would have liked to play this stage, you know, Hot Topic, right? And Kevin laughed, you know. And then some guy comes up to me and told me Hot Topic was a store where you could buy clothes.
It's in every mall.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with. Speaking of an item up that you would wear on your clothes, we conked at a pad in Houston this last tour with the Meat Puppets, and beautiful people, Dan Owen Patrice, Wisconsin people live in Houston now. Remember, have you ever seen pictures of Sid with this button that says, I'm a mess?
Yeah.
He's got the button. He bought it at auction.
He's got the button.
There's stains on his probably fucking. His mother auctioned off stuff after he died before she died.
Whoa.
And he has got, it's a little plastic key. Tom Watson has a picture of him holding it.
Wow.
And you can see it in pictures of where the stains are in. The stains. That was a
good
band.
That's a good band.
A trip.
Yeah.
I'm a mess. It was actually a promo thing from some kind of glam rock band in England. Wow. And nothing to do with it, but it's just like.
And now they've opened up every Hot Topic. Made that button and now they're selling
it. We're going to play Everything Ends?
Everything Ends.
Yeah. Okay. 1 square mile, people.
Around doing all that you
Wow, for Pedro show, it's been really righteous having you guys over. Yeah, I don't want to ask you what that tune's about because, well, it's at the end of the show. But I would like to, because you've been around and here you're going with a new project, like almost revitalized.
Mm-hmm.
I'm calling the next tour I'm on Nuevo Spirito, the new spirit, because this group I'm with is a new drummer. And in a way, even though you've been around, it's trippy,
fresh,
you know,
up
the next round, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, if a younger person just getting into this asks you for advice, what would you say, John?
Don't stop. Music will be there for you your whole life. Whether you get famous or whatever, just, you know,
do it.
Just go for it. Get creative. You know, do what you want to do. Get, you know, the creative juices flowing and just play. Don't worry about what other people think. You know, just go for it.
No.
Never stop. Yep. Just keep on going forward.
And you don't stop because you're sure not stopping the sure shot.
Exactly.
Have fun.
Have fun at it.
Have fun. I mean, that's...
Don't get sad. Don't write sad songs.
No, it's not so much that, but
have
just...
Have fun.
But have fun
have
doing...
Have fun singing sad songs.
Have fun doing what you do.
You sad singing fun songs?
Why not? It gets it all
I'm
out.
I'm just trying to
get it all out there.
Just to
get it
out there.
Let's get it off.
Remember, we're talking about a young guy coming in.
Sure. I mean, but, I mean, part of all this is having fun, and
yeah, I
had the most fun playing music, and, you know, it didn't turn out to be my career path.
That's okay,
but
right?
But if it could have been, I probably would have enjoyed it a lot more, you know.
Well, I think all four of you guys have good advice that way.
Yeah.
And it's serving as a good example by getting out there and taking it. Next plans?
Right now we're kind of in a hiatus with Rob. He had a retinal tear on his eye, obviously, and so we're kind of letting him heal.
Yeah, because drums are shot.
Yeah.
No, I've heard of other drummers with eye problem. They got to stop.
Yeah, so he's on a hiatus right now. We're actually going
to heal up quick.
Probably. Yeah,
3 more weeks. Ooh. That should be good.
Yeah. And after that.
And then after that, we've got some shows in late August, early September, September. Not so much tour stuff, but just, you know, around the South Bay and
local. Okay, so you're in SoCal. Catch One Square Mile. They also got a Bandcamp page, so you can check out the music. Go to Felony Records and support the band. The idea of putting out records and playing gigs.
Yeah.
Brother Matt, I want to thank you so much.
Clearly.
Always accentuating
that connection.
Good people, it's been July 11, 2017 edition of Watt for Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.
Yeah.